You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 574. Back in the saddle again!
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum wheat. Back in the saddle again, riding the range once more, toting my old 44.
And we're back in Punk News Podcast. Hallie Bullitt, I can't stand Aerosmith. What's your stance?
I like Dream On, and I like Dream On so much that I've kind of forgiven them for all their sins. Aerosmith's fine, whatever. If I don't, I don't need to listen to, I don't know. Come on, Dude Looks Like a Lady is kind of hilarious. Not a great song, but a hilarious song. I don't know. Aerosmith's cool. I'm into Aerosmith.
Daring choice. And more, where do you stand in the Aerosmith battle?
Yeah, like Dream On's fine and stuff, but other than that, they exist. I don't have a strong opinion. John, what's your opinion?
I'm two thumbs. I can't stand Steven Tyler. I think Joe Perry's all right. I like Joe Perry and Alice Cooper's band, the Hollywood Vampires, despite their horrible name and despite the fact that Johnny Depp is in the band for no apparent reason whatsoever, except for them to say, look, there's Johnny Depp, you know, and he stands there and smiles and everyone claps in the audience, you know. But anyways, I think Aerosmith is just kind of cheesy and just unoriginal rock. Like, I feel like they just rip off other bands and do it not as well, but kind of cornier and more annoyingly. I don't know. Why are we talking about Aerosmith? This is the Punk News Podcast. And the question of the Punk News Podcast is, you guys don't talk about enough punk on the Punk News Podcast, which I'd argue
what's going on?
It's almost sounded like who's the character that showed up that one time?
The track keeper.
It almost sounded like the track keeper was that.
He's breaking through.
John Gentile, you okay over there?
Yeah, what happened?
Well,
I feel like you're hosting the podcast while also checking your email, and you just got a horrible email. Did I guess right?
In the grand scheme of things, we'll do it live. In the grand scheme of things, it won't matter, and a year from now, I won't care.
We can also start over. I'm not insisting that we forge ahead in this confusion.
Let's do this, actually. I often regret being brutally honest on the Punk News Podcast, but I'm going to do it anyways, because that's good entertainment. And if I don't whore myself out for entertainment, what's the point of the world? So... The New Year's Eve Summer's Horror 5 is this Friday, and Joe Jack Talcum is my angel, and I want the listeners to know why Joe Jack Talcum is my angel. Joe, when I did the first time I did a show with Joe Jack Talcum, the second show I ever threw, it was the Christmas Mega Bash, and it was Colleen Green, Cassie Ramone, and Joe Jack Talcum. And Joe Jack Talcum opened because he was the local guy, and he was cool about it. And honestly, I've been told many times, Joe doesn't care about opening or be, apparently, as I understand, Joe has basically no ego at all. And I think that maybe that's because he knows he's Joe Jack Talcum, I'm not the most competitive person in the world, but I'm relatively competitive. I think Joe sees art as art and isn't competitive at all. So Joe doesn't – I've been told, so I don't know if this is true or not, because – I've never had Joe give me any grief whatsoever or any annoyance whatsoever. Joe is the man. Joe is the champion, and so it's difficult to read Joe, if you ask me. But Joe is an angel. So Joe opened that show, and I really appreciate that Joe opened that show, even though he's Joe Jack Talcum, he probably should be headlining, you know. And when we did Sturgeon with Crazy in the Brains and Joe Jack Talcum, Joe co-headlined, but he played before Sturgeon just because he's a cool guy, and I don't have to go last, you know. And so I always kind of felt bad for that because, as I said before on the podcast, is because Joe is such a trooper, and because Joe is willing to bend, he often carries more than his fair share of weight when other divas that are being pains in the ass say, I don't want to do X, Y, Z. And Joe just says, well, I'll do it because he doesn't care. And that means that Joe often gets the short end of the stick just because he's willing to accept it and do it and not protest, whereas other more diva bands might complain. And so I've always appreciated that, and I've always felt so bad that Joe was always carrying the weight. We did the Summer Soiree 3, which was World Inferno, the Joe Jack Talcum Band, Danjo Mar, Street Vengeance, which is Chip of Pure Hell, and Trash Knife. That's what it was. Street Vengeance started late, and they played longer than they agreed that they said they would play, which really threw a wrench in our operation, because during those shows, I literally had 10 minutes between bands, which means there is no room for overplaying at all. I mean, really, 10 minutes between bands is too short. And so Danjo Mar, that's Joe Jack Talcum's band, they got their set cut into, and I felt so bad about that for like a year and a half. I really did. And so then we decided to do the New Year's Eve Mega Bash, and it was going to be Colleen Green and Joe Jack Talcum. And I'm like, finally, it's New Year's Eve. I got plenty of room time-wise. I'll give Joe as much time as he wants, and hell or high water, I'll make sure Joe gets his full set, and I'll make sure that we say, hooray, Joe. Joe's the greatest, and Joe's a trooper, and Joe says, I'll do it, you know, with his band, Danjo Mar. And Joe is – and it was going to be his first electric show in over like a year and a half. Like, Joe's the man. And the other bands playing are Crazy in the Brains, Colleen Green, or the other bands that were playing are Crazy in the Brains, Colleen Green, and Froggy. And Froggy is a bunch of young women, and you all know who Colleen Green is. And Colleen, well, due to the COVID situation, Colleen understandably didn't want to come down. I understand that. That's fine. That's cool. So that, but then I got to go back to Joe. I'm like, well, Joe, do you want to play the show or what? You know, I mean, if you want to do it, I'd love to do it. But if you don't want to, that's cool too. And so Joe says, I'm in. And I'm like, Joe, you are my angel. You are the champion. And then just now, when I just freaked out, I just got an email from Froggy, who I love, and who really have been gunning to do the show. They just told me they don't want to do it. Not 10 minutes after I emailed Joe and said, Joe, let's roll. So now I got Joe and Crazy in the Brains acoustic, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm being super – I'm not being flaky, but from Joe's perspective, it appears I'm being flaky.
I don't think Joe is going to think that you're being flaky. I don't – there's like a global pandemic going on. Things are getting canceled left and right. It shows what a kind person you are that you're taking this all on yourself, but I can't see Joe being like, John Gentile and his flakiness again. I don't see it. My personal take.
So, all right, I'm thinking this through right now.
You're up against bigger things than, you know what I mean? You're up against bigger things than any of us really could have even imagined, like, you know, 2 years ago. So
what I could do is I could email Joe tomorrow. I'm just thinking this out. I can email Joe tomorrow and say, Joe, Froggy's out now.
Listeners are really hearing how the sausage works.
They are. I mean, this is what I fret over all day long, because my main goal in life is to keep Joe Jack Talcum happy, because he has been there when I needed him to be there. You know what I mean? And I hate always letting Joe take the weight. I hate it. You know? So I could email him tomorrow and I could say, listen, Joe, Froggy's out. If you want to play, man, and make it the Joe Jack show, I'm down to do it. But if not, No harm, no foul. What do you think of that? Or should I just tell him let's not do it? Because right now it's Joe and it's the Joe Jack Talcum Band and Chris playing an acoustic guitar. That's what I've got right now. Which honestly, I mean, it would be
amazing. Yeah,
the Joe
be
Jack really Talcum cool. Band friggin' rules. That's not the question. The question is right now, I was going to have five band mega bash, and now I'm down to one band and one guy. So, oh my God. And also, I don't want to talk about Hallie and M. Know I have a certain issue with regards to deposits somewhere.
Sleep on it. Sleep on it, John.
It'll be clear in the morning.
God, poor Joe's always carrying my weight. Oh.
But people that go to show, I mean, obviously this is more dramatic and there's so many factors, but people that just show up and show up to shows and like enjoy themselves, like God bless them. I mean, the whole reason we all make music, right? Or put on shows to begin with. But like most of the time they have absolutely no idea what, like the kind of blood, sweat and tears that has had to go into getting that show, like from conception to like it actually freaking happening. People don't know, but this is it. Now you're hearing, right? It's this kind of, again, this is extreme, but there's often some kind of hair pulling involved, right, John?
Always. Well, I mean, hell, we got some, you guys just want to rap for a little bit and then we'll get to our news stories. Let's talk about throwing shows. Oh my God, I feel so bad. Like, it just, I feel like Joe and me are cursed in that, like, every time I try to really say, hooray, Joe. Even a megavirus comes and gets in the way. you know, if it's not pure hell, it's a megavirus, you know? But, you know, oh my God. Poor Joe. Oh my, if you're listening, I want you to go out now and go on Bandcamp and buy some stuff from Joe Jack Talcum. He makes amazing stuff. And oh my God, this is so frustrating. This is so frustrating. Oh my God,
I hear and feel your pain, John. Yeah. That shows us it's a pain. It's a pain. Well, and like as a band, when you're like the band that just like is the one that's putting on the show, like somehow unless the venue reaches out to you and says like, hey, do you want to do this thing? But like generally you're a band, you're trying to get a show for yourself. And so you're trying to put together a bill that's appealing enough that you can convince a venue to do that show. And it's like all this juggling and trying to beg favors from bands that are slightly bigger than you. And then you've got to get artwork and then you've got to try to get people to show up. And then it's just like, it definitely just wears you down after a while. It just wears you down. You're like, I thought I was gonna just play bass and sing punk. And no, like what I do is I like stare at my computer screen and I stress over like the logistics of like tours and shows and BS. It's just like the most like necessary but like hellish part of all of it.
Well, you're right. The first show that I ever threw, and sometime maybe we'll do an episode where I just reflect back on that, was Summer Soiree 1, which might have been the most amazing show I've ever thrown, and that's okay with me because I mean it was World Inferno, then it was Posers when they were really on the rise, Crazy in the Brains when they were just starting to pop and pushing it to the limit. And like there was people jumping off the balconies, there's people throwing stuff. We the fire alarm went off because it was so hot in the building. I had to throw a guy out. Like I physically had to grab a guy and hurl him out because he kept jumping off the balcony and he hit some guy. It was not a safe situation. And it was such the show was out of control at some points, but not so out of control. It was dangerous, but it could have went dangerous. But luckily, it didn't. So that's kind of like the best kind of show ever. You know, and World Inferno were amazing. And the show was people were like smashing stuff up. But the show was if things went sour, I could not have stopped it. Like I didn't have the physical power, you know, to stop things, you know. So the next time we had World Inferno, the club made me hire extra bouncers, which I understood. Like I understood, and the show was a great show, but like wildness was so much tamer. You have never seen more like five more bored looking bouncers in the entire. Like they were so bored, you know. They're like, why do they need five? Like, and they were big dude. I wouldn't want to fist fight. We're talking 6'5", 6'6", big dudes, big fists, big heads. You know what I mean? And they're like, why? They're like, why do they need? I mean, they probably didn't care because they were getting paid. You know what I mean? But they're like, why did they hire us for like a bunch of band nerds standing there and clapping? You know, like you would have thought it was like a Slayer show or something. You know, oh my God. So anyways, so literally twice today, I've emailed Joe Jack Talcum and told him the show is on, only to get bad news 15 minutes later. Anyways, and here's where I'm at. You know, I mean, I lose money on most of the shows I throw. Once in a while, I get lucky and I make some money. I never make crazy amount of money. The amount of money I make is never worth the level of risk investment-wise. You know what I mean? But I don't do it to make money. I do it to have fun and to make something cool. I didn't even have fun for SummerSwarry 1, but the idea wasn't to have fun. The idea was to do an accomplishment, and I really feel we all did that. After that, they started to be a lot more fun. You know, SummerSwarry 3 was really fun because it's World Inferno. It's Joe Jack Talcum. You know, we know how it's going to go. The second show with Sturgeon and Crazy in the Brains, which was Sturgeon and Crazy in the Brains, and Danbert of Chumbawamba. I mean, that was awesome because Danbert was actually – that actually – well, some other time we'll do the story – John's Petty Squabbles with other concerts from a, you know – and you can tell me how if I'm insane or not. And honestly, in my stories, I'm always like, am I the bad guy? And I rarely decide that I am the bad guy, which means maybe my perspective is entirely twisted. You know, but no, I'm the good guy here, you know. So anyway, but that show was a lot of fun just because a lot of people showed up. All the bands were amazing. So I had a lot of fun at those shows, you know. This one has been a lot of struggle due to COVID, and it hasn't been a lot of fun. I'm thrilled that Joe Jack Talcum is or was going to play. I was sure that Colleen was going to play, but this one's been a lot of stress since the start, you know? And so if I'm not getting paid and it's not fun and it's not my job, I mean, honestly, maybe I should be spending this time on my actual job instead of, you know, fun in the afternoon, in the evening. You know what I mean? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, like, I don't want to become a – you know, there's so many people in music, a lot of writers for punk music, that they become jaded. You're like, you know, oh, you know, I'm down. I don't feel jaded at all. I don't feel jaded seeing bands. I don't feel jaded listening to music. I'm always excited. I'm not even jaded about concerts, but at this point, you know, this one's been a lot of stress. The one before this – actually, the one before this was a lot of fun, actually. That was a Sonic Attack. That one was, like, no stress and all fun. So I don't know, man. Maybe my energy is best spent elsewhere because Philadelphia doesn't need me to throw shows. There's tons of people throwing shows. So if I'm throwing a show, it's really just vanity, isn't it? I think, you know. I don't know.
No, I mean, you're doing it to I don't know, like, show people a good time, and that's a good time for you. You know what I mean? But not if it comes down to this. I think you can't judge how fun it is to put on shows right now. I think you need to, like, sleep on this, figure out what to do with this show, wait until, hopefully, dear God, please, like, COVID is not, like, lurking around every fucking corner threatening to ruin all our plans, and then maybe try again and take stock of whether it feels worth it or like a total hassle that's not worth it, you know? But this is not a good time for any of us to assess really anything in our lives and decide whether it's working for us or not. This is just a bad time to assess things.
True. Here's what it comes down to. If it was any other band in the world, except World Inferno, who don't exist anymore, I would just cancel it. Well, actually, that's not true. Like, if it was the Dwarves, I wouldn't cancel it. So I was going to say, if it was anybody else but Joe, I would cancel it because I feel like I owe Joe. But that's not true either. Like, if it was the Dwarves, if it was a lot of bands, I wouldn't cancel. I said, you guys want to do it, you know? I just feel extra bad because it's Joe, and she's always suffering my chaos world. Oh, I miss World Inferno. If only I do miss World Inferno. Maybe that's – I mean, the main reason I threw a show was so we could have a World Inferno show. And now that World Inferno is gone, I am very sad. And mm-hmm. I mean, World Inferno was just – well, and Joe Jack Talcum. World Inferno was perfect because I could throw a show. I know people are going to show up. And we can pair them with anybody. We can pair them with a metal band, a punk band, a circus act, a contortionist. And the kids are going to love it because it's World Inferno, and the World Inferno fans are the best in the world, and they're there to have fun. And that's the truth. You know what I mean? It's the best audience, an audience that comes to have fun, you know, as opposed to, I mean, I'll just throw out, you know, pick any hardcore band of choice, you know, like hardcore, well, pick any hot indie band of choice. If you pick a hot, let's use Vivian Girls. Vivian Girls are the best example. Let's say I threw a show at the height of Vivian Girls, and the Vivian Girls talked about this, is days felt not annoyed, I don't put words in their mouth, but they felt unease that when they would play a show at the height, half of the audience was there not to enjoy the show, but to judge them and decide whether or not they're worth the hype, you see. Whereas with World Inferno, I never had that problem at all because everyone's there to have fun, you know. And, which, yeah. And World Inferno, they're going to kick ass. You know, every once in a while you hear something about a bad World Inferno show. I saw 26 World Inferno shows. Every single one was a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10. I never saw a even not great World Inferno show ever, you know.
And now
that era is over. And, you know, like I said, at Punk Rock Bowling, there's fewer things sadder than staying at the party after the party's over. So maybe in that respect, maybe the party's over. I don't know, you know.
Listen, I'll tell you what I know.
What do you know, Hallie Boy?
What I know is that this has been a tumult. We talked some things out before we even started recording. Now we've had a real plot twist right up at the front of the podcast. But I'll just say that I've already been sitting in my chair for about 45 minutes, and I have to pee. And I'm gonna go pee right now, and y'all can talk about whatever you want to talk about, and I'll be back soon.
All right, and more. Should we talk behind Hallie's back, or should we play a song? What do you want to do?
Both.
All right, let's talk behind Hallie's back. And more. Let me think. What do you think is Hallie's best characteristic, and what is the most annoying characteristic?
Best. I think. Asking interesting questions and really good stories. And
she does have good stories.
Yeah. I really want to hear the, what is it? Is it the Whoopi Goldberg? Who is it? The birthday party. I want to hear that so bad.
Hallie's got like a bunch of stories. Like maybe we should just like see, here's the thing. Hallie's got some killer stories. She's got the Whoopi Goldberg story. She's got the Star Trek story, and she's got a whole bunch I don't even know about. You know what I mean? And so should we just like make her tell them, or should we wait for them to come up naturally? And the other question is, like, Hallie Brooks done some really cool things. Like, she's been in Stomp, she's been in Rent, she was in several extremely cool pop punk bands for years. She toured all over. She was on TV. So do you think she like wants us to? Do you think she wants to talk about that kind of stuff, but doesn't because like she doesn't want to feel like she's like being like, oh, I'm, you know, Ms. Cool, even though I do that kind of stuff all the time and I'm not as cool. Or do you think she doesn't talk about them because she feels there's more to her life than that? You see what I'm saying? Like, let me give you an example. Do you think Billy Idol wants to talk about being Billy Idol? Or do you think Billy Idol wants to talk about, like, French art from the 1800s because no one ever asks him about that? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think we should come back. Wait. Were you talking smack about me?
No. So let's play a song and we'll come back after all this existential crisis.
Were you theorizing that Odin is Santa Claus and also that I'm also Odin and Santa Claus?
Yes.
Oh, that's not what you were talking about. Okay.
We're on to you.
Damn.
We're on to you, Odin. let's play some World Inferno simply because I miss Jack Terrycloth. I know. Let's do Just the Best Party because every time you saw World Inferno, it was Just the Best Party. So this is World Inferno doing Just the Best Party. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a real D-bag as opposed to Jack Terrycloth, who was another angel in my life, as is Joe Jack Tackman also. Oh, and we're going to play some World Inferno, and then we're going to play some Joe Jack Tackham stuff. So, yeah, we'll be right back. Yeah.
Love you. The hours that we're running out of power. Come with me between the sheets. We'll recharge our batteries. Come into my bed chamber. This is not a tease. The temperature is permanently at 69 degrees. I got a sleep number bed. I wanna find out your sleep number. Lie down next to me and get a good night's slumber. Let's go to sleep. Let's go to sleep. We'll slumber sound. We'll slumber deep. Let's go to sleep. Let's go to sleep. We'll throw a party in our dreams. Close our eyes. Close our eyes. In the morning, we will rise. Immune response will guide us if a virus gets inside us. Before the time comes when they test you, you should get a good CS. So turn off the crazy news, cause it's time for us to snooze. Put your head up on my pillow, just relax and let the world go. Come into my bed chamber, this is not a tease. I keep my cubicle at 69 degrees. Let's go to sleep, let's go to sleep. We'll slumber sound, we'll slumber deep. Let's go to sleep, let's go to sleep. We'll throw a party in our dreams. Close your eyes, in the morning we shall rise. Let our dreams be a surprise. Let's go to sleep, let's go to sleep. Just you and me, between the sheets. Let's go to sleep, let's go to sleep. Let's go to sleep, let's go to sleep.
And we're back, and this episode's a mess, but listen, man, sometimes life's a mess. Here's where someone else's life's a mess. So there, a little while ago, there was this German lady, and sadly, her husband passed away. And she was selling her husband's CDs because she didn't really want them, and she figured someone else could make better use of them, which I actually approve of. I mean, I don't want to be weird and creepy about this, but one time – actually, one time this lady was selling the Chimp Eats Banana demo tape. And Em and Howard, you know who Chimp Eats Banana is?
No.
No.
So Chimp Eats Banana – is Chumbawamba before they were Chumbawamba. And I was like, I've been looking for this tape for like 15 years, you know, and I bought it from the lady online. And she said the reason she was selling them is, well, like it was her husband's, but he sadly passed away. And she'd rather sell them and get them to people that would really enjoy them rather than have them sit on a shelf somewhere, which I think is probably definitely the right perspective, right? And she gets some money too. That's like the right idea, right?
Yeah.
Like sometimes people say, oh, well, why are you selling your husband's stuff? It's like, well, I mean, but she could give it away, but I don't, you know, I mean, like her husband's not around, so maybe she needs the cash, you know, which, and she's not using it, and I am. So, I mean, that sounds like the right thing to do to me, you know. Anyways, I guess that's a weird line of thought, but I'm just saying is I'm really grateful to that lady for doing that, because without her and without her husband, I would never, ever, ever get that tape. I would probably never ever see that tape ever again. So I'm eternally grateful for her being that generous, if you will. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So anyways, so this lady, husband passed away, and sadly, and she's about 51. She's 58. And so she was selling her husband's CDs on eBay. And she sold an Eric Clapton CD called Live USA on eBay for $11. And I'm going to tell this story chronologically, not the way the news broke, but chronologically. So she was selling on eBay. And according to Clapton's attorney, which we don't know if this is true or not. Actually, no. I'm going to tell it news-wise, not chronologically. So she sells a CD on eBay. Clapton sues her and gets a judgment against her. She appeals the judgment. She says, I didn't know that the CD was unauthorized, so I'm not liable for copyright infringement. Germany, just like America, is you don't have to know something's infringing to be liable for copyright infringement. German and American copyright laws are not identical, but very, very similar. So she lost the appeal, and the court awarded Clapton's attorney's costs and court fees against her, which basically means she had to pay Clapton $4,000 for selling an $11 CD on eBay. Clapton got like universal poo-pooing across the internet, which he should, and we'll get into that. Then after that happened, Clapton's attorneys issued a press release, which I think was – I mean, it was clearly damage control, but I don't. It's not how I would have handled it. I'm going to summarize. They said that Clapton signed a declaration for the lawsuit, but that's the last interaction he had with the lawsuit. Also, we sent her a cease and desist, but she kept selling the CD after we sent a cease and desist, so we had to sue her. However, we're not going to go after her because she's not the kind of bootlegger that we're trying to get. And that's basically the end of the story. So unwittingly, Clapton's attorneys, German attorneys, kind of did something kind of stupid here, is they admitted that Clapton knew about the lawsuit beforehand. People were like, well, maybe Clapton didn't know, which anyone that practices law knows that a plaintiff always has to sign a declaration before you file a lawsuit, so they would have to know about that. However, you could argue that maybe it wasn't Clapton's people that filed the lawsuit. It was some other entity claiming an interest in that material. But Clapton's attorneys made it clear, nope, it's Eric Clapton, and he signed the papers to do it. You know, it's just kind of stupid if you ask me. Basically, no other websites picked up on that except for us. And I really hammered Clapton in my articles, and I'm glad I did because he deserved it.
He did.
And so basically, Clapton's people say he's not going to go after the widow for the judgment, but she still has to pay her own attorney costs and her court costs. And basically, he kind of looked kind of bad. And pretty much everyone says he looked kind of bad in this, except for the weird Clapton stands that appeared that said, well, she ignored a cease and desist, or, you know, copyright infringement is copyright infringement. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like just a bunch of like people that genuinely seem to support Clapton. And I think we live in a very weird time now. And I think the reason those people are supporting Clapton is because Clapton has been very pro conspiracy and that COVID doesn't exist or COVID isn't what blah, blah, blah. And so I think like those people that agree with that line of thought now will defend Clapton in any circumstance, which is a phenomenon, not a new phenomenon, but a phenomenon we saw with Trump, is that no matter how horrible Trump was, his fans, instead of saying, well, he shouldn't have done that, they would say it was okay for him to do that, even though it was okay for him to cheat on his wife. It was okay for him to, you know, make fun of a dead guy, even though we're the religious right. That's okay for him to do those things, you know, make fun of starving children. That's all right because he's our guy. And so, you know, this is a phenomenon that we've seen in the post-Trump era and the Trump era, that no matter how horrible the guy you support is, you support him no matter what, almost to the point where you are evil and you know you're evil, but you've thrown your chips in with, you know, Skeletor, so you're just going to ride that to the end of the day, you know what I mean? Like, to evil, you know. Which was also a World Inferno phrase, but somehow when World Inferno said too evil, it actually meant to fun and whimsy and not, you know, suing old ladies. So listen, I've got a lot of thoughts on this. Hallie, you want to kick it off or what do you want to do here?
No, I mean, I don't have super strong opinions about it. I like,
you don't?
I don't. because I don't know, like it seems plausible to me that Clapton could sign a thing, but his lawyers obviously aren't saying to him like, hey, we're suing a widow who's selling her dead guys. They're probably just saying like, sign this, we're suing someone that's trying to sell your stuff. And and she did literally say in her response to them like, go ahead and sue me. It seems like she just thought this
was true, though. I don't think that's true. I think she said that.
I'm pretty sure she said that. Cause so she obviously felt that this was like an infringement of maybe, you know, her rights, or that it wasn't right for them to send her a cease and desist. And she decided to take a stand about it, which I kind of admire. But you know, but you also kind of have to know that if you do that, you know, that it could go the other way, you know. And I'm totally with you that the only reason that they are like waiving all these huge fees that she was fined, like, is because of the publicity, the bad publicity that Clapton's getting. I mean, but, you know, I'm not trying to defend Clapton here. I've literally no love for Clapton right now. I'm just saying, like, on the face of it, it just sort of seems like a celebrity has some lawyers. Their job is to sue people who are selling bootlegs. They did that. You know, she fought back, and then it went badly for her. That just sort of, just on the face of it, that's sort of what it seems like to me. And I could definitely just be not seeing it the right way, because John, I know that you have from having read your punk news coverage, I know that you have very, very, very strong opinions in the other direction.
Hallie Bullet never seems to surprise me. Always, whenever I think I have Hallie Bullet nailed down, I'm like, I know how it's going to respond. She surprises me.
Well, am I just trying to be devil's advocate? My husband accuses me of just intentionally, annoyingly being devil's advocate all the time. So maybe that's, am I doing that here?
Well, maybe, but that's good and that's punk. And also, actually, I'm glad you're doing that, because in the current age, like on both sides, on both in the right and the left side, like people are resistant to having their ideas attacked. And if you attack their ideas, then they get like all hot and flustered and angry and toxic. My sense has always been, it's good to have your own ideas attacked, because if your own ideas can't withstand criticism, maybe your own ideas aren't that strong, and you shouldn't be scared to have your ideas attacked. Like I always think back to a while ago when one of the other punk news editors was annoyed at me, and he's like, "Well, the Melvins suck," and I'm like, "Well, I don't care that you say that. I know the Melvins are awesome. That just means you have bad taste." You know, he didn't like that response very much. But just goes, my idea was right and his was wrong, so I didn't mind that, you know.
But if you go all the way back, I'm not positive that I think anyone should be being sued at all for this kind of stuff. That seems kind of silly to me. But if we operate in a world where people can sue for something that, you know what I mean, where someone with a bazillion dollars like Eric Clapton can sue somebody for selling a bootleg for $11, like that seems kind of dumb. But like the whole rest of this like boulder sort of rolling down the hill, none of that seems particularly egregious to me.
Here's where we reach our accord. So I'm an intellectual property attorney, and honestly, with this year, I'm almost more of an entertainment law attorney than an IP attorney, which actually an entertainment attorney is an IP attorney, but we kind of think of them as separate things, sort of. So this year, more than ever, I'm more of an entertainment law attorney than I'm an IP attorney, which I've been enjoying. Not this year, but last year, a big part of my practice was what we call copyright policing, or bootleg policing, or trademark policing, which is we go and we find bootleggers and we beat the crap out of them and we say, give us a whole bunch of money, you know, which I love doing. I love doing. And I don't represent any band that's nearly as big as Clapton. My biggest band might be, I don't know. I mean, well, Clapton's extremely huge. So I'm, you know, I represent a lot of bands that make their living playing music, which is a decent amount of money, you know, not an insane amount. Several of my clients, we have, I'll say, quarterly meetings where we say, all right, we got this guy. Let's beat this guy up. Let's not beat this guy. And honestly, like, so my bands are not nearly as big as Clapton. And we have let a lot of parties off the hook because it's some kid. It's some old lady. Sometimes we'll send them a letter and say, yo, man, sometimes we'll send them a nice letter that says, listen, we know you're a fan, even though I know they're not a fan. I know they're just trying to make an easy buck. We know you're a fan, but, you know, just, you know, my client makes his living through music, so could you just stop it? You know, I mean, and most of the time they do. Sometimes they're real dirtbags and double down, which always surprises me. But you know, I've never beaten up anyone as small as her. I've beaten up a lot of bigger fish, but the point I'm making is the bands that I represent are much smaller fish than Clapton, and they let go guppies bigger than she, this widow is. And what that means, because it's not worth it, you're not going to get money out of her, and it's just going to look like a real prick, you know, beating up some kid in the garage, beating up some guy, some lady, you know. And we would never ever go after a lady like this, because we only ever go after the producer and the manufacturer or the distributor. This lady isn't really a distributor, she's just some lady. Just some lady. Like that's a terrible – the point being is the attorneys here – really bungled everything. And more, what do you think an attorney's job, and what's the job of a lawyer?
Make sure your client doesn't have to go to jail or pay a fine.
Hallie, what do you think what's an attorney's job?
Represent the best interest of your client.
Right. An attorney's job is to get the client what the client wants. Mm. Okay? And if the client has a terrible idea, then you change what they want. But an attorney's job is not – often people will say like to win a lawsuit. That's not an attorney's job. That's an element of an attorney's job. But an attorney's job isn't just to sue. And so here the attorneys are doing a terrible job in getting the client what the client wants, or getting the best thing for the client. The best thing for the client here, let some old lady – she's not that old. I mean, she's not old, but let some middle-aged lady go. You know, if you go on eBay right now, I can find you dozens and dozens of huge-scale Clapton T-shirt bootleggers. Beat them up. So, I mean, really, this is – maybe they just, like, let some first-year associate kind of, like, make – like, go get them, first-year associate. And he's like, you know, bumbling, you're like – what the client wants is money and not bad press. And here, they're not getting any money, and they're getting a ton of bad press. Yeah. So this is an attorney doing a terrible, terrible job, and that's what this is. The lawsuit should have never been filed in the first place. And even if they couldn't knock out the eBay thing, you just got to let that one go if you're Eric Clapton. You got to let that one go if you're – pick any – Emma, which one of your favorite small bands? What's the band with the three young ladies, and they're in like two bands at once?
Susie True and
– if you're Susie True, you let this one go. You know what I mean? like this is terrible. Attorneys love to say, oh, well, you see, that attorney was terrible, and I would have done a better job. Attorneys love saying it. This is the exact wheelhouse of my job. This is maybe one-third of my job is beating up these guys, and I don't have a single client where I would recommend going after this lady, you know? And Clapton is not represented by me. Clapton is represented by a gigantic law firm, okay? So the fact that this made it that far is really is insane, frankly. Now, of course, Hallie says, well, you know, Clapton didn't know about it. He just signed the paper. Well, I get that, but you know what? It's Clapton's job to take care of Clapton's business, and even if he wasn't knowingly, that doesn't get him off the hook in the court of moral or the court of legal, frankly. Because, if you own a bunch of properties and you have a property manager and the property's running them like slums, but you don't check into it, does that get you off the hook? No. You know, same thing here. It's Clapton's job to make sure the people he hires are behaving appropriately. And if they're not, then he's as liable as they are. And you can't get off the hook by, you know, hiring bad help and saying, oh, it wasn't me, it was the help. You know, particularly when you're Clapton and you're just a total all around prick. And apparently you're still kind of racist, even though you've made your entire living playing black music, which astounds me.
For real, dude.
I don't know how you love black music so much, but you're still racist towards black people. That astounds me, you know? Like, man, it's bizarre. Anyway, so, I mean, this is a real bungle on Clapton's attorneys. It's a bungle on Clapton. This is how an attorney should not represent his client. It's the exact opposite. And I'm glad they got tons of bad press. But is it going to hurt Clapton in the long run? No. And the fact of the matter is, it certainly is hurting his widow, at least somewhat in the long run. She's got to play court costs. It's been a couple of years. She's been banged around. So I feel sorry for her. I mean, I feel totally sorry for her because she's not some kid that's making Clapton CDs in a basement. She was selling her dead husband's CD that she bought in a grocery store. So, I mean, I feel totally sorry for her, you know.
But now, all she had to do was to get the cease and desist letter and just be like, okay, I won't sell this thing for $11.
Yeah, well, I guess
have to dig her heels in? And that's the part that doesn't make sense to me.
I guess because Clapton's being a bully, that's why. You know, Clapton is legally right, but he's not morally right. You know what I mean? I empathize with this woman because I've sold some CDs on eBay that of suspicious origin. I've got lots of records that are suspicious origin. I would never sell like a bootleg Ramones record of like Ramones 1, but have I bought and sold, you know, Clash records that are live that were never put out by the Clash? I certainly have. And
that's
so,
why I find it so hilarious that you, for your job, are cracking down on bootleggers. I find that so funny, John.
Well, I'll refine that statement in a second, but let me finish this other thought. It is so sometimes eBay will give me crap. I'm like, why are you giving me crap, eBay, when you're not giving crap to the Chinese company that who makes thousands of dollars bootlegging Highway to Hell on CD? Why are you beating me up and not them up? So I empathize with this lady for sure, you know. As to Hallie's point about me being hypocritical,
I didn't say it's hypocritical. I said I find it funny. I don't think it's hypocritical. I find it funny. It was not accusatory at all.
Here's my stance. I've always had this stance. The point of copyright is to protect the artist and to protect the art. That's the point of copyright. And so when copyright ceases to do that and actually harms the art or makes the art scarce, then it's not doing its job. Great example would be the Screamers record. The Screamers Gaze X demo is one of the greatest non-released records ever. I've got a copy. I adore it. You know, why can that not be released? Because copyright won't let it be released because some entity, and we're not even sure what entity, owns it and doesn't know they own it or know they own it, but they don't want to release it. And beautiful, I don't know if beautiful is the right word, amazing art that people should enjoy is being trapped and no one can get to it. And it is a moral shame for that amazing art to be lost forever. So I am okay with someone bootlegging the Screamers Gay to X demos because whatever entity owns that isn't releasing it, so someone should bootleg it so we can appreciate and enjoy that art. And if there comes a day when that entity does want to release the Gay to X demos, I'll buy one for sure because I want the nicer one, you know. So with regards to Live Clash stuff is – there are lots of Live Clash records that were never released, you know, so I'm glad someone's bootlegging them so we can hear them and we can enjoy how great the Clash are. Now, would I ever approve of bootlegging a London Calling? Never, ever, ever. Would I ever approve of bootlegging a Emmore pick an old school punk band?
The Bags.
Would I ever approve of bootlegging the Bags t-shirt? No, because Alice Bag can make those t-shirts and she can use that money. Or let's use I'm thinking of a band like a CJ Ramone shirt. I'm extremely against bootlegging a CJ Ramone shirt because CJ Ramone makes his living off music. So the bootleg from him is an atrocity and is horrible and mean-spirited. So I'm totally against that. But as no one's making a living off the Screamers and whoever owns the Screamers doesn't care about it, so we might as well get that art out so we can enjoy it. And that's my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So there, Hallie Bullet. Take
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I get it. I totally get it.
How about this? And more, Abby Ooze is now streaming her first EP, but it's not really her first EP. She actually released two cassettes before this, a demo cassette and a live cassette, and it has pretty much the same songs as this EP. The EP is called R.I.P., and Abby is saying it's the first and last EP that Abby's going to put out. As of course the listeners do know, Abby used to be Jade in the Posers, the band the Posers, and they put out 2 7-inches. They played Summer Soiree 1, and actually Abby Ooze, when she was going by Jade, played her first ever solo show at the Punk New Spring Slamdown. It was Jade, Crazy in the Brains, Drew Getz, and Up Up Ups, who morphed into Catbite eventually. I don't know if Abby's going to do anything after this or not. Apparently, the name Abby Ooze is a reference to something, but I don't know what it's a reference to at all. Emmore, did you dig Abby Ooze? And what'd you think of the EP?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. It has that that fuzziness. It's just like perfect, you know. And it sounds really, really, really cool. Her voice sounds awesome. I'm glad it's available digitally, so, you know, like, can listen to it instead of having to find the tape or, you know, get a physical version. That's really nice. It's surprising that this is, her final release, because it sounds like there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of momentum and stuff. Like, it seems like this should be continuing, unless, you know, like, this is the end of the Abby Ooze era, and then she'll, like, reemerge with a new name or a new project or, like, possibly a like, new sound or whatever. So I kind of thought about that. I didn't know Abby Ooze was a reference, and now I'm trying to figure it out. Hallie, what did you think?
I loved this. I thought this was so good. And it is like has such a different vibe from like the Posers stuff, and yeah, it's like really, really, really lo-fi, poppy, just really appealing songs. And John, I read your review, and I agree with you that The Plumber and the Dancer, what a great fucking song that is, right? That's like a hit, right?
There's
hit song. It was so good. I don't know. I loved it. It was super great. I mean, I would hope that maybe Jade Anna, like maybe that's just the last thing she wants to do it as this person, as Abby Ooze. But I don't know. But I'm with you. It'd be kind of a shame because it really just feels like she's like found something that's cool. And I don't know. I know. Bandcamp is definitely promoting this release. You know, they're sort of putting it on the short list of stuff that they're into these days. So yeah, so I'd be interested. You know, maybe if enough people are interested, maybe she changes her mind and releases more under this project. Because I like it.
I'm curious, what part of Bandcamp said check it out? Because I saw chatter about that, but I wasn't sure what it was referencing.
Okay, so like I got, so I get like an email from Bandcamp like every week, just based on the stuff that I like, telling me other stuff I would like. So I, this was like in the email that they sent to me.
Oh.
And then yeah, I feel like then even when I so I checked out the music, because there's a music video for one of the songs. It's actually like kind of my least favorite song on the release, but there's a music video. And then when you look in the comments of the music video, there's like a comment that's like, Bandcamp sent me here. So I, you know, I get the sense that they're kind of hyping this, and I think it deserves it.
Well said. I've been a huge fan of Poser since I first saw them. And I think it was the Beaumont Warehouse in Philly, which isn't even a venue anymore. Since then, I followed all the people: Rory, Johnny Mick, Ray, and Abby or Jade. And I gotta say, like, there was once when the band Posers is a classic example. Of a band that, like, oh, we all love each other, we're all best friends, and the next day we're broken up, we hate each other. what? You know. There was people like, oh, well, you know, can Jade / Abby, you know, do good music without the rest of the band? And the fact of the matter is, this is actually pretty fantastic. I like this a whole lot. I'm sad that I hope that it's just – I saw Abby Ooze – not Jade, Abby Ooze live a couple of times. Jade live, I think, was just Jade and the guitar. Abby Ooze was Abby and like a drum machine and like a keyboard, and sometimes she would have a one-person band. And so I'm hoping what basically she's saying, this is the end of the one person band project. A lot of these songs, I'm not exactly sure, but I believe in my guess, a lot of these songs are about like kind of the destructions of Posers and what was going on in her life after that. I think that's what a lot of this is about. And so it seemed to be a very personal release, but I love how it kind of sounds like the newest of new punk, but also kind of like sounds like first wave West Coast stuff.
Yeah.
There's a very obscure artist called Suzanne Ree, who we talked about the Punk News podcast before, and this reminds me of Suzanne Ree a lot. I just thought this was great, and I hope Jade / Abby keeps doing music, because she is so talented and these songs are so well written and they are so kind of classic but also fresh, like I'm Not the One, the first track, or Brat. Like, in a way, it's like, oh, this is like punk rock, but also it's like, I don't know if I've ever heard this feeling expressed and this emotion expressed against this sonic template. So I'd really love for her to keep doing stuff, and I hope she does. So, yeah.
You're here.
Let's play The Plumber and the Dancer, and then we will come back and talk about some other stuff and wrap this on up, because we've been gone a while, because I've just been crying the entire
– You've been reeling. Zone.
Yeah, poor John, poor Jim, yeah. Anyways, well, we're right back. This is Abby Hughes doing The Plumber and the Dancer.
Yeah.
are back, and let's talk about some more news. And that news is the following story. And that story is Sarah and the Safe Word. And more, tell us about Sarah and the Safe Word.
Yes. Okay, so first of all, great band name. So they have kind of a steampunky kind of look to them. So like that's really cool, and they can be very theatrical. There's like piano and violin and like some jazz and kind of cabaret stuff and like little like MCR influence and stuff. So they're really interesting. There's a lot going on, just in general. So they released a song called Solstice, and it was released on the winter solstice, December 21st. So like the solstice is always kind of a weird day. So it was neat to have a song released on the day kind of about it. That's kind of sad, but kind of sinister and kind of angry. And there's a lot of emotion going on. The song really surprised me because it starts off like kind of slow and stuff. And then there's sort of like a breakdown and there's rough vocals and like kind of yelling. And there's like distant like gang vocals, kind of like they don't have the same effect as like the vocals in Mama by My Chemical Romance, but they kind of like brought that to mind. I wasn't expecting it to get kind of like it gets a little heavier, but like it's still light. So the song was really interesting. And I really love that this band pisses off the commenters. So anything they do is going on the site. Anything they do. I do like them. I think they will like go far. I think they're just kind of they're going to hit their stride soon. What did you guys think of Sarah and the Safe Word?
It's funny. I like also heard like some My Chemical Romance definitely in there. I thought it was like slightly less catchy than there was another song of theirs that we talked about on the podcast. It must have been the last single they put out that I thought was like a little catchier than this. I didn't find it very interesting. I just couldn't. It was like I was listening to it and it was fine as background music. I just like couldn't really make myself like be that interested in it until M actually kind of like you said, like they kind of in the last minute of the song, there's some like they kind of go big with some choral stuff. I thought like there was just like really like bolder like orchestral stuff at the end that was interesting and my ears started to perk up. And then I really liked, I think, what you were talking about where they have like kind of like a singy vocal that kind of alternates with a more screamy vocal. It was an interesting ride that I was taken on by the song because I just kind of like I just wasn't that interested until I was like very interested towards the end. So I think this band is making some cool choices for sure. John, did you like this?
I like that it upset people. to me, I don't mean to be mean. I didn't love this track. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. You know, often people like say, "Oh, John, you like World Inferno. You like this band." And often that band is a band that like is sort of circusy like World Inferno, but not as good. And you know, the charm's not there. This I didn't think was that bad, but I did kind of have that like that circusy sort of goth-y feel. I didn't love it, but I do love that the mere existence of the band really upset people. And I do like that this band is genuine what they're doing, and therefore that means they're more punk than a lot of bands we talk about. And so they're all right in my book. Would I pay to go see them? No, but if I was at a show and they were playing, I'd certainly watch, and I'd love to watch them upset. But the fact is, man, though, the people that they upset never have the guts to actually go out and do things. They just sit behind their computer. So at any rate, I'm glad this band is upsetting people. That's cool. Let's talk about some more news here. How about – oh, here we go. Here's something that's upsetting. Well, nobody, I guess. the listeners probably know the story about Nirvana. Nirvana got sued by this guy called Spencer Elliott, who is the baby on the cover of Nirvana's – what the hell's the name of that album?
Never mind.
I can't remember that. And so basically, the statute of limitations for the vast majority of causes of action have passed. So now he's suing under a civil child porn cause of action. That is not criminal. I mean, an individual can't bring a criminal action. Only the state can bring a criminal action. But a criminal action would be like, Nirvana, you're distributing child porn, so you should go to jail. Whereas Spencer Elliott's cause of action is, you're distributing child porn of me, therefore you have damaged me, therefore you should pay me money. And he was asking for, we discussed this last time, $150,000 or $180,000, from each defendant, which was weird because that's copyright statutory damages, which is not child porn civil action. It's copyright. So it was almost like his cause of it was almost like he wanted the money that you get under copyright, but his cause of action was for a different claim, which was just, I don't know if someone made a mistake. That's just the number they pulled out of the thin air. That confused me, frankly. But a lot of things do. So pretty much everyone says, this kid's an asshole, you know, he got paid, you know, his parents should have paid him, blah, blah, blah. This isn't child porn. And, you know, this guy's a real piece of work. And also he reshot the cover a whole bunch of times. So it shows that he wasn't damaged by it and he's just looking for an easy payout. And my perspective was, I sympathize with the kid in that – he's not a kid anymore, like 30 or something. But I sympathize with the young gentleman in that he's on one of the most iconic album covers of all time and he got like $400 out of it and he didn't even get the money. I can sympathize how that can be annoying and sad, but it doesn't mean you get free money from Nirvana. So I thought – I don't think this guy was evil or bad or even greedy. I just think he got the raw end of the stick and kind of his parents maybe were at fault. But that being said is as the baby in that album cover, like it could have been any baby. Like I don't think he's doing anything special as a baby in that album cover. You know? and no one would even know if it was him except for he goes around saying, that's me. You know?
Totally.
So yeah. I don't think he's a bad guy. I just think he got the raw end of the stick and you know, sometimes life isn't nice and someone has to bear that. And in this case, Nirvana certainly didn't do anything bad. They made interesting art. I mean, I'm not a huge Nirvana fan, but the album cover certainly is an interesting image. And they paid them for it. And it's certainly not child porn because, I mean, if this is child porn, that means the picture of any baby is child porn, which is an extremely perverse line of thinking. If a naked baby in of itself is child porn, that's extremely perverse, you know, and that really says more about the viewer than the picture, you know. So it's not child porn. It's a baby in a pool. It's a baby, you know. And so anyways, the point being is Nirvana has filed a not a demur in federal court. They called it's a 12b6. But they filed a request for dismissal. That's a 12b6. Basically what that means is you are trying to sue me, but you are suing me for something that you can't legally sue me for. I'll give you a plain example. Let's say I'm driving down the street and Halle bullet hits her car into my car. I can sue her, right? That's property damage, right? However, let's say I'm walking down the street and Halle bullet's mean to me. She says, John, you're stupid, and keeps walking, right? And I sue Halle. He's like, she called me stupid. She's mean. The judge says, well, being mean isn't a cause of action. Therefore, I'm dismissing this lawsuit. That's exactly what Nirvana is saying here. They're saying that the plaintiff, Spencer and Rudy, hasn't alleged facts that support any cause of action for which you could sue someone. And I think Nirvana's going to win, frankly. I am somewhat surprised that Nirvana didn't just settle this for like $20,000 a person just to make it go away. And I think that's what he was hoping for. I think he was hoping that, oh, they'll just give me $30,000 each. And there's like 10 defendants. That's an easy $300,000. But that's not what Nirvana and the record label were like, you know what, we're not putting up with this. This is BS. We're just going to blow them out of the water, which honestly probably might cost them more in the long run. But from a principal standpoint, I think they're right, you know. But on the other hand, maybe they did. I mean, he was asking $150,000 or $180,000 from each person. Maybe they did say, listen, we'll give you $20,000 each. Just go away. And he might have said, no. So then they make, well, we're not going to pay you $1 million. So you know, maybe that is what happened. Who knows? You know, if he was smart, he would have taken the easy payout and run away as fast as he can. But I think he's going to get blown out of the water. And frankly, they might file a countersuit against him. Oh, actually, they probably won't because that would be very bad PR, wouldn't it, now that I think about it? I mean, I sympathize with the guy. I just think he's in the wrong here. And I'm totally monopolizing this episode. Halle Bullet, make me stop talking.
No. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm glad they're filing a complaint in return. And I'm glad that they're not just paying him because I'm with you. I do think you just at some point just need to say, like, this is not pornography, and we can't accept someone calling it pornography. It's just not. It's not right to call, you know. It just, and I'm not saying, and I am a huge Nirvana fan, but I'm not saying that as a huge Nirvana fan. I'm saying that as just like a logical, rational person. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, in general, I don't love people suing one another. I think it'd be better for everybody if this would just go away as quickly as possible. It's just kind of painful to be in litigation about stuff like this. But I'm glad Nirvana's fighting back. I think that's right. Em, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm glad Nirvana's fighting back and standing up and being like, we're not just going to pay you because, you know, you came out and said this. Like it really just seems like, well, we all know Spencer Elliott's name now, you know, we know he does art. We know this, we know that, good for him, you know? So I think that was a big motivation. Yeah. Like he does seem like just pissed about the money and everything. And, like John, like you said, with, no one would know that he is the Nirvana baby unless he came out and said, yo, that's me. Look, you know, so that's a big thing, too. He also has a Nirvana tattoo or a Nevermind tattoo. Sorry, on his chest somewhere. So good for Nirvana. And I kind of think that Spencer Elliott's going to come back with something, but I hope he doesn't.
I'd almost be more sympathetic if he had just said, you know, like, you used my image. This album went on to make so much money, and I saw not even a tiny bit of it. And my image was a very critical part of the whole thing. Like, if he had just gone about it, like, from that standpoint, I think it's the saying that it's, like, emotionally damaging and it's porn. And again, like, I think you could, you know, as an individual, I think you could change your mind about how you feel about your, as he keeps saying, like, how he always says the phrases it the same way, like his naked baby self, his naked, his, he always says it like the same way, like his naked baby body or something. But like, you know, I think as you grow older, have different feelings about this. But I think really just at that point, you turn to your parents and say, like, I'm not comfortable with this. Can we talk about it? Or like talk to your therapist or something. I don't think you can turn around and make these kind of legal claims, but I don't, you know, I don't know that much about the law, but I listen to what John Gentile tells me about the law, and I'm always glad to have a little bit more actual factual knowledge about it.
Well, there you have it. And with any luck, we'll be able to sue people for being mean in the next couple of years if my legislation gets passed. Made of Ace, an English band that has quite a amount of buzz in the UK and had some buzz in the USA and played Punk Rock Bowling 2018 and was pretty well received. They've released a remix of their song Nostalgia. It's called Devil in the Belfry Remix, and it was remixed by the Devil in the Belfry. And I was quite interested in this in that it heavily – I mean, Made of Ace is a punk/oi kind of band, and we're actually punk/oi/Distillers influence. That's what Made of Ace is, and they're cool. The remix, it reminds me of a Stevie Nicks remix, particularly the remix or the remake of Dreams Deep Dish rather. And it kind of like takes out all the rock elements more or less and kind of puts a dance or 80s driving synth under the chassis, if you will. And more, what did you think of the remix? What did you think of heavily remixing the rock track and Made of Ace and the tune in general?
I think remix, if a remix is done right, it's really, really good. I see what the Devil in the Belfry was going for with the remix, for sure. I really like the original song, and I didn't like the remix that much. Like, again, like it's upbeat and it's, you know, it's fun and stuff. But I just think, it, especially the vocalist's voice, like it's more suited to like the guitars and the drive and, you know, everything that way. Also at the end of the original, there's like sounds of seabirds and stuff, and that's not in the remix. So So I hold that against the remix because there needs to be the birds. But, you know, like it's kind of neat. The Devil in the Belfry remixed one of their other songs, Forever. That one's kind of cool, too. Hallie, what did you think of the remix?
No, don't hate me. I totally missed this, you guys.
Oh.
It was the last of the stories that John sent me, and I didn't see it. I'm so sorry. The way you're describing it makes it sound very interesting. I'm very excited to listen to it. I have nothing to add. I'm so sorry. John, can you speak about this from the point of view of someone that actually listened to the song?
Yes, I can. I liked it. I didn't love it. I remixing a rock track is very hard, and the vast majority of rock remixes are terrible. Just listen to any of the dance club remixes of Rolling Stones songs from the 90s. They've been ever. They are bad. If you want to hear a bad song, it's like a "You Got Me Rocking." It's like unlistenable. It's like real bad, you know. So it's difficult to mix a rock song. Stevie Nicks's Dreams Deep Dish Deep Dish remix is very good. Billy Idol has some good dance remixes and some really bad ones. I would say this was almost great, but where it faltered is the key. And do you know the key to remixing a rock song into a dance song?
Keep the energy the same. No, I don't know what's the key.
Kiss. Keep it simple, stupid. And that, like, it, like, basically, like, dance music and rock music are very different. And that the key of rock music is that it's loose and it swings and it's not perfect every time. Pretty much every huge rock song, at least from 1950 to, like, 1983 or so, proved that, you know. And then once, you know, studio production got better, rock music kind of got, I guess, less wilder, and now we've got the Foo Fighters. That even proves my point more so. But the point being is they're very different genres, so they're hard to combine together. So here's the key. You take the hook from the rock song, and then you put a simple but energetic and driving synth bed under it, and there's your recipe for excellence. And this almost did that, except for it put a whole bunch of other beats under it, and it kind of suffered from the exact thing that a lot of Wu-Tang stuff suffers from. And that when you listen to a Wu-Tang thing, like, there's all this incredible rapping, and the beat under it is arbitrary. And you can tell that they put the beat, like, you can tell they had, like, Ghostface just rapping over it, boom, ch, boom, ch. And then later on, they put, like, this crazy beat under it. But Ghostface isn't interacting with the beat. And so it's, like, almost – it's very annoying and it's arbitrary. It's like, well, why is this beat here? Doesn't you know, go with the vocals at all. Not all Wu-Tang is like that, but a lot of later-day Wu-Tang is like that. Here's the same thing. They took the vocals and they put a beat under it, but the beat is arbitrary with regards to the vocals. When really, if you ask me, they should have constructed the beat around the vocals to really make it hit. And I'm going to say the example again. The Deep Dish remix of Stevie Nicks' Dreams, which actually is a recut, not a remix, is perfect because it's simple and the beat follows the vocals, and that's why it punches extra hard. So listen, people, I've cut many award-winning platinum Grammy record, so I know what I'm talking about. And so if you want to remix a rock song into a dance song, take the hook, put a simple driving beat under it, and make sure the beat is reflective of the vocals. So there.
I can't wait to listen to like your Cat Bite remixes or like whatever you're working on. DJ Gentilly.
DJ Johnny G. I would remix a Cat Bite track. Now we're talking. Further prove my point, my remix of Crass's Band from the Roxy, one of the more popular Crass remixes on the Crass Remix Bandcamp page. So that proves my point.
Totally. I remember that Woo! One.
Yeah, that was.
I was like really impressed with myself, but I think maybe I was impressed with myself because it was my own creation. What did you guys think of my Crass remix? I'm like, oh, this could pass for like a professional remix. Did you feel that way, or did you think it was just John falling in love with his own creation yet again?
It was. I mean, this was a long time ago that we listened to it. How long ago was that?
About a year.
Over a year. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I remember thinking it was good. I don't remember the specific. I also don't have like a huge attachment to the original, so I think you can't really judge like how good a remix is unless you like know what the source material was. And I didn't have that angle on it either. So, but yeah, I remember liking it.
Hallie Bully carefully practicing diplomacy. Very well done, Hallie Bully.
I didn't have to care. I didn't have to be careful. It was just what I honestly felt.
fair enough. If there's one thing we are on the Punk News Podcast, is that we're honest. And that's why it's such a powerful and effective program, which is why we've won so many online awards for the excess of our. Oh, listen. Well, so next week is we're going to do our end of year episode, most likely. I definitely, like you said, Sam's been real busy with work lately, so I don't want to do it without Sam. So if Sam's not here next week, we'll just do a regular episode, and then we'll push it back a couple of weeks. But the end of year episode is probably my favorite episode next to the Christmas episode. We've been going on so long. I'll let you two go soon. But I was thinking about this. I was watching Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the claymation special by and I was thinking of I was pretty proud of the last few Christmas specials, but they're all very violent. Oh no! I was watching the greatest Christmas special of all time. Howdy, both, you know the greatest Christmas special of all time?
I think most people think it's the Peanuts one. I don't really love any of them.
Well, I would say Peanuts or Muppet's Christmas Carol.
I just watched for the first time with my son and loved it. And Michael Caine kind of kills it in that movie, right? He's delivering a far more serious and moving performance than one would expect from a movie starring puppets.
The exact same thing I had while watching it for the 75 millionth time, and that Michael Caine is a master. He doesn't ham up. He acts if he's just talking to real people.
Yeah.
It really isn't. And I was, first of all, if you ask me, you could make the argument that Christmas Carol, the Dickens Christmas Carol, is maybe the best story ever written. And I might agree. I think it's so simple, but it's so moving and it's so powerful. And then it speaks truths that are as true today as they were back then, sadly. So I'm like, this is so good. So next year, I think we will do a scripted Christmas special. And I'm going to challenge myself to do something that's funny and moving and no violence. That's going to be the challenge, I think.
I'm going to challenge myself to give a Michael Caine kind of performance. No, but seriously, he's at the beginning of the movie, I felt a little embarrassed for him. I was a little bit he knows they're puppets, right? He knows it's not Royal Shakespeare Company. And then by the end, I was just sobbing. It was so good. It was such a good performance.
And more, have you seen Muppet's Christmas Carol?
No. I will watch it at some point. But no, I haven't. I watched the animated Disney one when I was younger, and that scarred me for life. So I try to steer clear of a lot of that.
Well,
it's a chilling tale. It's a tale that sticks with you. Everyone knows it.
It really is. It really is. Anyways, so speaking of things that stick with you, this is the Punk News Podcast. You go to the podcast at punknews.org. Should we play the remix, or what do you guys want to close on out with here?
I don't know. I have another totally random thing I would play, but if you want to tie it back into the...
What do you got, Hallie?
I'm really enjoying this. So Howardian is the kind of brainchild of Ian from Japanther, and it's sort of always him, and then I think a rotating cast of characters that he's collaborating with. But he's got a new single called Rock Candy off a new release that's going to be called, or I guess it's called Are You a Friend of Brenda? Are You a Friend of Brenda? So yeah, I don't know. This is Howardian doing Rock Candy, and I think it's cool.
And we'll see you next week.
A morning of drunkenness becomes your everyday.